Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is an end to stress. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing the country code and then 760-918-4300. And as always, I like to set the table before we get started in on calls. And I thought the way I'd do that today is by sharing a little visualization. Play along with me here. Imagine you're relaxing on a beautiful beach, and the sun is shining, and there's a gentle cooling breeze flowing in over the water, and waves are lapping at the shore, and you're in heaven. And after a time, you decide to catch up on some reading, and you pick up a fascinating book, and you've read this guy's books before, and you've always thought the main character was an awful lot like you. And before long, you're completely caught up in the drama of the story, and for the time being, as happens when you read, the beach and the ocean disappear as you lose yourself in the novel. And each time you think to yourself that you'll put the book down at the end of the chapter and go back to enjoying the beach, the author hooks you in with the seductive promise of even more intriguing things to come, and you tell yourself, just one more chapter, and you go back to your story. And fear and love and anger and laughter and tears become your experience of life as the highs and lows of the story take you on a roller coaster ride in your own mind. And before too long, you're so caught up in the emotional stress of the book that you think to yourself, boy, I need to do something to relax. But fortunately, you've got your MP3 player with you, so you pop the headphones in and you click on a peaceful meditation that begins with the words, imagine that you're relaxing on a beautiful beach. Now, the reason that I wanted to begin with that is because for me, that is the nature of the human experience in a nutshell. Our nature is well-being. Our nature is that place on the beautiful beach. But we get caught up in the experience of our story. And our story becomes so compelling that not only do we forget that we're just reading a book on a beach, but we even do things within the story to cope with the story, like pretending that we're relaxing with a book on the beach. And that's the reason why I don't really teach stress control to my clients. I don't promote particular techniques or meditations or practices. It is because I've seen a pretty simple truth, which is that there's no stress in life. There's only stress in our thinking. So to try and do something to reduce stress when it's my own thinking that's creating stress is a bit like massaging my toes as a way of reducing the pain caused each time I drop a rock on them. It's not that my toes won't feel better. It's just I could maybe drop less rocks. I work with a man named George Pransky. He's got a wonderful site at PranskyandAssociates.com. And I once heard somebody ask him how he could say that their stress, which felt so real to them, was only a mirage, which is the word that he used for it. You know, a trick of thought without any substance to it. And George thought for a moment and he responded, well, it's a real mirage. And I think that's how the myth of stress gets perpetuated, is because it really does feel real. We really do feel the stress in our body. And because we think it's coming from outside us, we try and address it by changing our circumstances instead of recognizing that it's all in our thinking. So I'm going to talk more about stress through the show, but I want to give you the numbers to call again. 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. And from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. But let's go to the phones for the moment. Let's go to Alberta, Canada, and let's begin with Andrea. Andrea, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm just looking for some help, if you could, on arranging my thoughts in a positive way to manifest a wonderful career, because I'm just coming off maternity leave and I don't know where to focus my energy.
Okay. Well, do you have a sense of what kind of thing you want to be doing?
Yeah. I do angel card readings and some mediumship. I'm just dabbling in it, and Reiki, and I'm just a little underconfident. I'm not sure how to You know what I mean?
Well, I know what underconfident feels like.
Yeah.
But now, are you underconfident? If I was going to give you three reasons for underconfidence, which one is closest to you? Okay, so sometimes people are underconfident because they aren't very good yet at what they do. I mean, you know, just in all honesty, like a first-year med student should probably be underconfident about performing brain surgery.
Right.
You know, it's not that they're not capable of it. They haven't really put in the hours yet.
Okay.
The second reason that that people are underconfident is because they sort of know what they're doing, but they've not done it. So it's not that they don't actually know how to do it, and that they doubt that they have the capacity to do it right now. It's just they haven't done it. So it's just simply a lack of experience.
Okay.
And then the third is they've done it. They know it works. People tell them that it works, but they have a lot of insecure thinking about, well, why would anyone hire me? And, you know, gee, it's only me, and I'm sure other people could do it, but, you know, little old me. So of the three where you just literally don't have the competency yet, you probably do have the competency, but you don't have the experience, or you have the competency and the experience, but just for whatever reason, your insecure thinking seems real to you in this moment. Which feels closest to the truth?
I think the third one, and I think the thoughts come from like financial worries, financial blockages.
So in other words, because you're worried about money, you don't feel confident asking somebody for it? I'm trying to make the connection here.
Yes. it seems I want it so badly, but I'm
right.
So needing stability that it's like a terrifying situation. So I'm getting positives back, like you stated, and it's like a good path for me, but I'm just worried about going ahead, and maybe I should get a day to, you know, 9-to-5 job to be stable and then pursue this on the side. I'm like scared to take risks when I feel like I'm not in the position to.
Well, so here's an interesting question, which is how much of a risk are you actually taking? Like, and so just here's what popped into my head.
Okay.
So if I put out a shingle saying, you know, and when I say put out a shingle, maybe it's, you know, put out business cards, brochures, call everyone I know, and say, hey, I'm doing this. Can you refer me? You know, offer everybody a discounted first session, however you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, for example, like say for the next 3 weeks, really followed up with everyone and just put all your energy into that. And it didn't take, would you be more than 3 weeks behind in getting a different job?
No.
So I guess my question is there really any risk in just putting it out there and seeing what you can do?
I guess not.
Yeah. That's because I didn't hear one. That's why I asked.
Okay.
And then, you know, if nothing comes of it, then for whatever reason, you don't have to make up terrible reasons for it. It could just be wrong time, wrong crew. You don't have the network yet. You didn't get lucky. Whatever it is, mm-hmm. that would let you know, okay, well, you know what? Let me do something else to take care of the short-term need. But then I'll keep building this in the background.
That sounds perfect.
Well, there you go then.
It sounds too simple, Michael.
Oh yeah. Okay, I'll help. Before you do any of that, obviously you have to say 4 hours of affirmations and you have to spin round 3 times and you have to spit. Would that be okay?
You're funny.
Oh, you know what, Andrew? The wonderful thing about life is that when we don't add the complexity, it really is simple.
Yeah. And is there some insight you can give us all on financial blockages that we create for ourselves? Is there any insight?
Well, you know, the insight really is in the question. Financial blockages that we create for ourselves. That's what we're doing. It's the same thing as saying, you know, hey, can you teach me better massage techniques to take care of my toes after I jam the rock onto them.
Mm-hmm.
That's already too late. just if you start to see the financial block is a story,
mm-hmm.
you know, there isn't this actual block that we could stick in a wheelbarrow and cart away.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story that you've made up to explain why you don't have the amount of money you want to have right now.
Wow, that's true.
Then it gets simple again.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Andrea.
Have a great day.
You're welcome. Well, I like it when it works out nice and simple like that. Let's see if we're on a roll. Let's go to Taos, New Mexico, and talk with Marta. Marta, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm glad to speak with you again.
Lovely.
I am very happy that I got through. I have a question, and it's about my way of having conversations with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a hard time to get out of the story, I guess. That's the best way to put it. This morning, he started talking about the same things he usually does. And that makes me feel nervous because I know that he will go through a whole cycle of the same. And I don't have the patience anymore to listen to it. So yesterday I told him, when that happens, don't be surprised. I would just stand up and walk down to the river and read a book. And when I come back, I will ask if you're all right, because I don't want to waste my time anymore doing this futile conversations about nothing. So I really would like to hear how you would simplify this whole process.
Well, let me ask you a question, Marta. When you said that to him, how did you feel in yourself as you were saying it?
I felt really good.
Okay, so you were saying that from a place of peace and relative well-being.
Yes, yesterday when he was open and he told me that he does this temper tantrum thing like a child, and he sees that it doesn't get him anywhere.
Yeah.
Then I told him, and when you do that, this is what I'm going to do next time, because I don't want to stand by and watch you, or just I don't want to be around you when you do that.
Yeah. And this may seem like an obvious question, but I'm going to ask him anyways. Do you love him?
I do.
Okay. And does he know that?
I don't think so.
Okay. That would be the only thing I would add to what it sounds like you've come up with very cleanly and clearly on your own. So now, if you had said to me, oh, I was in a horrible place and I was feeling really stressful, and then I would maybe question it. But when we speak from our well-being, even if it sounds to someone else's ears harsh, it usually isn't. It usually is heard the way it's intended.
Yeah.
And so the only thing that I have found in personal relationships that makes all the difference in the world is for the person to know that what isn't on the negotiating table is your love for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, hey, I might not be there.
Yeah.
But there is nothing you can do that's going to make me love you any less.
Oh, yeah, that's important.
And then if you just add that in,
it's
so much easier for people to hear when they get that you mean it.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, Marta, I really trust the feeling. You know, one of the most useful things that I think we can do with our feelings is use them as a feedback mechanism for our own state of mind.
Yeah.
So if we're in that kind of peaceful place in ourselves, then we just know that what occurs to us to do is probably worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're in that stressed and out of touch with our clarity and well-being state of mind, then chances are we want to be a little hesitant about following our thoughts, because they're probably not taking us in the best direction.
You know, in the past, I thought that it would be loving to stay and listen and listen and listen. But in time, I discovered that I cannot do that, really. After a time, I'm not even present.
Yeah. And you know, I think the big thing there, Marta, is just to recognize that love doesn't look like anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Sometimes love may look like an argument. Sometimes love may look like a hug. It doesn't look like physical violence. But other than that, it really looks like what it looks like in the moment.
Yeah. And what feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is helpful. Thank you so much.
That's beautiful, Marta. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
I love you. Bye-bye.
Do you know, it really is amazing how much wisdom we already have inside us. And in a way, when people call for how do I do this or how do I do that kind of questions, the answer is almost always, well, how are you feeling right now? And when you get back to that place in you of relative clarity and well-being, then you'll either know what to do if there's anything to do, or you'll know that you don't know yet, and that's okay too. And from that place, just being in that place, the next insight, the next piece of wisdom will come, and then you will know what to do, and you'll be able to move forward. And we're going to move forward to Chicago, and let's speak with Carol. Carol, hey, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm having a lot of financial stress right now. I bought a house 4 years ago for my mother, who was not doing well physically, and my son and my daughter and myself living in the house. And my mom did really well, and she got a lot better, and she wanted to go back to her condo in Florida. And so she left over a year ago, and I still have this house. And my daughter got married and moved out, and now it's just my son and I in the house, and he's going to be graduating high school and going to college. So I figured it's time to sell the house. But the market, the way it is right now, I had a realtor come over, and she didn't even think I'd be able to get enough money to pay the mortgage.
Right.
So now that means I'm going to lose all the money I put into the house and probably have to do a short sale. And I'm just, this is all within the last couple of weeks, found out all this. I'm just stressed out now.
So can we, do you mind if we lean into this a little bit, Carol?
Sure.
So here's the first thing that you said that let me know why you're stressed, and understand it is so normal. So it's not like, oh my God, Carol, how could you think this? It's just, this is how we think, is that you talked about being under financial stress, right? There's no such thing as financial stress. There's no such thing as marital stress. There's no such thing as relationship stress. There's no such thing as anything except physical stress, which is actually a measurable phenomenon, but has nothing to do with stress the way we all use the word. But it is the way that we talk about it. We talk about it as if somehow inherent in these life events and life circumstances is this icky feeling that we call stress. And because of that, we think we need to resolve the life situation in order to feel better. But the problem is, when we feel that way, we're in the worst possible state to address the life situation. So we tend to make mistakes. We tend to act either rashly or not quickly enough. And then we get ourselves into trouble. To the extent that you could see that every stressful feeling you have in your body and that you've had for the last 2 weeks has been a direct response to a stressful thought, it will get a lot easier. So first off, am I talking like Martian? Does what I'm saying, are we at least
no,
in the ballpark?
I totally get it.
Okay.
And I know, and I've been talking to myself, and I see when I give myself the scary thoughts, like, oh my God, what's going to happen in the future? And then I snap back to reality and I'll say, well, okay, the future's not here right now. I'm here in the moment and everything's fine right now. And, you know, maybe there's a gift in this and I'm trying to find the gift in it. I understand when I give myself the scary thoughts.
Yeah. So, okay. So, and here's the gift in it. There's two different ways people ask that question. So sometimes trying to find the gift in it is like, you've already decided it's awful, but you're trying to find a positive in it.
Right.
and it's too late. It's like finding a positive in something you've already decided is negative. Even if you find one, the overall picture is negative. It's like I had a friend who was asked to participate in a debate. He's a professional hypnotist. And he was asked to participate in a television debate on the dangers and evils of hypnosis. And he said, well, I don't believe that hypnosis is dangerous or evil. And they said, well, that's why we want you on the show, to take that point of view. And he said, yeah, but the way you framed it, that the discussion is about the dangers and evils of hypnosis, mean I've lost before I even come on the show. So when we've decided that this is a terrible thing, all the positive thinking in the world won't make any real difference, because we've already decided that the positive thinking is happening inside the context of this is a terrible thing.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to try and sell you on this is a wonderful thing, but I can try and sell you on the truth, which is this is a thing.
Yeah.
Life's full of things. You know?
True.
And really, the impact those things have on us is down to the thinking that we have about them and how little we do. Because, see, it sounds, and understand, I'm not trying to make light of this, and I think you can hear that, which is why I'm saying it. But
yeah.
I understand that saying, I'm not even going to get back the money I put in, makes it sound really awful. Whereas saying, it's going to cost me $5,000 or $10,000 to get rid of the house, which I'm going to guess is closer to the truth, in terms of real money, like money that would come out of your bank account. Is there an amount of money that comes out of your bank account when you sell the house?
Well, it depends on how I sold the house.
Okay. So let's take a medium case scenario. So not worst case, not best case.
Okay,
does it cost you money, physical money that's going to come out of your bank account to unload the house?
It may.
It may. And
there are programs, too, that the government has where, you know, I could walk away from the house without having to then give any more money.
So let me give you a choice of two situations that you could find yourself in. Okay. One is, situation A is you've owned a house and you paid for the house and you're going to have to short sell the house, so you're going to lose all the money you put into the house.
Right.
Okay. Situation B is you bought a house and you've paid for the house and you get to walk away from the house completely clean.
Right.
Do you want to be in situation A or B?
Well, B sounds a lot better.
Yeah, but do you get that they're the exact same situation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's really where we mess ourselves up, is we think that it's important to have an opinion. It's like, you know, I once heard Werner Erhard years ago, the guy who created EST and the forum and those programs. And I heard him giving a talk where he said, if you want to know the impact of your opinion on the movement of the universe, go outside on a relatively clear night and voice your opinion in great detail to the sky about life and politics and the government and fairness and your family and anything else you can think of, and notice if anything happens.
Mm. Right.
And the beautiful thing is when we get how little impact those thoughts have on the reality of the situation and how much impact they have on our experience of the situation, it's a lot easier to let them go.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
So I think we should keep talking about this in the second half of the show. So we're going to, we've got a lot more calls. If you want to try and get in, numbers 866-254-1579. Nancy, you are next in the queue. If you're on hold, please stay. I'm going to try and get to you guys in the second half. If you like the kind of things we talk about on the show, I just want to briefly mention, because I'm excited about it, I'm launching my first ever retreat in Ojai, California, and it's going to be a chance for just a small group of people to get together with me for 3 days in a beautiful resort in Ojai, and we're going to really look at thriving, at how do you thrive in your life regardless of your circumstances. So if you're interested in that, go to my website, supercoach.com/thrive. And you can learn more about it. You can also read daily, weekly tips at supercoach.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neil. In the second half of the show, we're going to take more calls. And I'm also going to share one of my favorite stories that I call The Source of All Fear. So we're going to be right back after this break. Bye-bye for now.
strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about an end to stress. And Nancy and Liz, you guys are next in the queue. We'll be coming to you if you want to get in the second half of the show. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. But before I go back to the phones, I wanted to share a story I call The Source of All Fear. And it's a story I first heard from one of my mentors, Dr. Richard Bandler, who was the co-creator of NLP. And it's about some work he did with a schizophrenic who everyone in the medical profession had deemed incurable. And the man hallucinated snakes everywhere where he went, and unfortunately was terrified of snakes. It wouldn't be so bad if he wasn't, I suppose. But so he lived in this constant state of stress and fear. And the man had been a very successful businessman, happily married, family, and then at one point, in the stress of his work and everything else, he just started to see snakes anywhere, everywhere. And what, by the time Richard found him, he was locked up in one of those old style mental hospitals from the horror movies. And he was living in a, essentially, you know, by all reports, in a drug induced haze. And he was spending his days in a wheelchair. And so when the man's wife came to Richard for help, he asked her if she was willing for him to try something a little bit radical. And she was desperate. And she said, you know, at this point, she was willing to try anything to get her husband back. So he took her at her word. And the next day, he stopped off at a joke shop owned by an old Chinese man who had a huge pet python named Alice. And about an hour after that, he appeared at the hospital with a barrel full of rubber snakes that he'd gotten from the joke shop and Alice, the very real python, inside a burlap sack. And he let the staff know what he was up to. They were pretty familiar with him already. And so what he did is he filled the shower room at the asylum with the rubber snakes. And he turned on all the showers until the room was filled with steam. And then he gently wrapped Alice around a warm shower head. Now, snakes love the warmth. So Alice the python was very happy. And then he had one of the orderlies wheel the man into the shower room and leave him there. Now, the man knew something was up, because when he looked around, all he could see were snakes all across the floor and hanging from the showers and hanging from the ceiling. And as you would expect, he started to scream in horror. And then Richard came into the room and commanded his attention and said, I'll make a deal with you. You tell me which snakes are real, which ones are rubber, and which ones are hallucinations, and I'll wheel you out of here. Now, I don't tell this story that often, but sometimes when I tell it, people go, oh, well, how cruel. Remember, this guy was in the chronic ward of a mental institution. He'd already been written off as incurable by the conventional doctors. So the man began pointing at rubber snakes all around the room and saying, rubber snake. And he pointed up at Alice, the python, who'd begun to uncoil and make her way down towards the floor to see what all the fuss was about, and said, real snake. And he then began to do something a little bit curious. He started pointing to empty space in the air as if there was something there and poking at it with his finger. And when nothing happened, he would say, hallucinated snake, with an ever-increasing sense of wonder. Now, by the time Richard wheeled him out of the room, this man had already begun to master the art of knowing the difference between what was real and what was just going on in his head. And since what he'd been imagining in his head was scaring the daylights out of him, that was a really useful skill for him to master. And once he could recognize that it was only his own thoughts that were scaring him, that were stressing him out, he quickly began to get his life back. And here's the thing, that's kind of the theme of the show. Even when our stories aren't quite as dramatic as that guy's story, once you realize that you're not afraid of what you think you're afraid of, you're afraid of what you think, you're not stressed out by what you think you're stressed out by, you're stressed out by your thinking, then life gets a whole lot less stressful and a whole lot less scary and a whole lot more fun. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Nancy in Toronto. Nancy, thank you for holding. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hello. Thanks Hello. For taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a twofold question concerning stress, and one is more about current work situation, and then the other is about more the bigger picture in terms of personal mission or what I really want to be doing with my life. But in terms of current work situation, I'm about to change locations, and I'm about to, within my job, and in terms of within the same company, and I'm about to start working weekends again. And this causes me a certain amount of, well, actually great stress. So my situation around it is, as I approach summer, friends are out on weekends, my boyfriend's out on weekends, they're playing, I'm working. So I'm trying to make working weekends bearable. And it seems like such a simple thing, but I know my belief system is working weekends sucks. And so when I'm deep in it, I get quite emotional about it. If that makes sense.
So what do you make of the fact that working on Friday feels one way and working on Saturday feels another way? Like, isn't that interesting? That, like, if you kind of got confused and you woke up and just, like, you'd slept really deeply and on a Saturday and you thought it was Friday, and so you were just like, oh, and you kind of stumbled into work, that until you found out it was Saturday, you'd feel fine. And then as soon as you found out it was Saturday, you'd feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that neat?
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
Hmm. Well, it is neat until the reality.
Oh, and I think unfortunately we've lost her. So please, 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 if you can, phone back, and I'll just talk about it very briefly, and then I'll move on to the next call. But you know, there's something really interesting. I know for me, I notice it most around sleep, right? And we think sleep is physiological. We think it's a pure physiological event, and that's just me being tired. But I certainly have had the experience, and I know a lot of people have had the experience of looking at the clock when I first wake up and thinking it says 7 o'clock, which is when I would normally get up, and getting up and kind of feeling pretty good, and then taking another look at the clock and realizing that it's only 1 a.m., and suddenly being exhausted. Now, what happened between my thinking it was 7 a.m. and having energy and my thinking it was 1 a.m. and having no energy has to be my own thinking. So even with something that seems as physiologically real as tiredness, so much of our physical experience and really all of our human experience is just a response to our own thinking. And once we begin to see that, the whole game changes. So I think we've got Nancy back. So Nancy, we have you back?
Yes. My apologies. My cell phone dropped the call.
That's okay. So just to go back to that idea, again, I understand that once you kind of think, oh no, it's Saturday, you feel bad again. Mm-hmm. But what... Forget about the realities of Saturday and what you'd rather be doing on Saturday and all that. Can you see that there's nothing inherent in Saturday that makes it a more stressful day to work than Friday?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So then one thing we can do is we can stop looking outside for the cure.
Mm-hmm.
Because the quote-unquote obvious solution to this, if we believed that it being Saturday really was why you felt stressed, is, well, don't do the job. But then you'd have a different reason to feel stressed because you need the money or whatever it is.
Right.
But since we know that it couldn't possibly be Saturday that's causing the stress, then we can look at what is it that you're thinking about working on the weekends that's such a stressful thought. So what is it? What you know, if I work on the weekends, then I have no life. If I work on the weekends, then my relationship won't work. If I work on the, you know, what is that thought?
I think it's a fear of losing out, missing out on some sort of fun thing that's going on, or overall just a sense of a loss of a sense of freedom.
So can you see that I could take any human being on the planet in any circumstance, and if they were inclined to believe me, I could create an incredible feeling of stress and discomfort for them by telling them that what is going on in their life is not the way things should be and is going to cost them a lot of fun and opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
So again, get that it's not personal. It's not like a Nancy problem. It's just the nature of thought. When we tell ourselves scary stories, we get scared. And when we tell ourselves stories about how we're missing out, we feel like we're missing out.
I was thinking in terms of this around personality. So I was wondering, how do I handle the stress of dealing with these circumstances that don't seem to suit my personality?
Well, here's again, I want to make a little distinction. We'll get as far as we get. We're not going to necessarily work all the way through this right here on this call. But there's no there's two different things going on. There's a choice that you have as to whether or not to do this job.
Yeah.
And you might feel like you don't have a choice, but at some level, you know that it's a choice. I mean, you know, nobody's going to come and bring a gun to the house and do anything bad if you say no.
Correct.
So you have these two different choices, and you may choose to take the job for whatever reasons make sense to you, or you may choose to not take the job for whatever reasons that make sense to you. Now, then there's this separate thing, which is you feel bad when you choose to take the job. And it feels like that has some kind of a significance in the choice.
Right.
But it's all sort of an illusion, because you feel bad because at some level you think, if I feel bad enough about this, then I won't do it. So the feeling bad is an attempt to motivate behavior. Now, if you can get, and I'm not saying that it's easy or that you absolutely can do it on this call, but if you can get at some point that it's just a choice, and you can always choose something different next weekend, the stress will go away, because the stress is created by your own thinking to try and force a choice.
Actually, that when I say that to myself, this is just a choice, I actually feel more empowered.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds very adult as well.
Hey, how about that? Wouldn't that be neat? So I think maybe let's leave you with that insight.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to replay this and mull that over. Thank you so much.
Oh,
and I'll leave the next part of the question to another call.
Okay, brilliant.
So
all
that
right.
Someone else can have a chance.
Thank you, Nancy.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Bye. Liz, you just dropped off as I was about to go to you, so if you can phone back in, Liz from Austin, be very happy to talk to you. Let's go to Jonathan in L.A. Jonathan, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. I think you were with us last week.
Yes. Hi, Michael.
Hey, what's going on?
Okay, so last week I called in regarding making the calls.
That's right, and you've been sending me emails each day as requested.
Yes, I didn't. I noticed that making the calls was the easy part, and even just having casual conversations was okay. Now the part, this is where the stress comes in, I guess, when I start to think about how to bring up the business with, you know, talking about appointments and showing products and stuff like that, I become very salesman-y, so to speak. So, like,
right. For
example, so I'll if I do talk about it, I end up kind of like throwing up all over them, just giving them way too much information, and then I beat myself up over it after, saying, "Oh, why'd I throw up all over them?" And I could have said something different. But if I don't say anything, I beat myself up, because then I'm like, why didn't I say anything? And then I get upset. Either way, it's a stressful situation either way.
Okay, so here's my question, Jonathan. Why are those the two choices? Like vomiting or going mute? It's like, it strikes me that there must be some other choices here.
Right. And it's kind of weird, because with anything else, I'm actually, with my particular business I'm doing, that I'm focused on, I have a hard time talking about it, but when I have another business that I'm working on with my wife, we do energy healing, and that is something I'm very detached to. I'm not really attached to whether people want to see it or not, and I can talk very fluently and very, you know, just nonchalantly. But when it comes to my own business, I just totally freak out.
So what do you think's different?
I think ultimately, it's just I'm not as focused on the result or the outcome, I guess you could say.
Okay.
I don't like when I talk to people about the energy healing, I'm just like, you know what, my wife and I, we do this energy healing. We help people out. I've had a couple personal testimonials and I have a couple friends that do it. And if you're interested, give me a call. And I don't really care whether they say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to my own business, then it's way different. I'm like, I ask, what would you like? Are you interested? Once they show a little sign of interest, I go all so, out.
Jonathan, do you know the old joke, doctor, it hurts when I do this? And the doctor says, don't do that?
No, I don't
okay.
know that.
Well, it's an old joke and I just told it.
So, okay.
But, you know, basically that's what you just told me.
Mm-hmm.
You said, hey coach, when I do things this way, they work really well. And when I do them this other way, they don't work at all.
Right.
And so my brilliant 20 years of training and advice tells me that the solution is, well, don't do that, Jonathan.
Okay.
Because last time I checked, you're still in control of your mouth.
Yeah.
So even if the feeling is there.
Right.
Even if the thought is there, oh my God, I got to tell him everything, because if I don't tell him everything, I'm going to beat myself up later.
Right.
And if I get,
right.
That doesn't mean you have to do it.
Okay.
So just again, you know, since we're kind of playing this as an experiment, just mm-hmm. notice what happens if next time you have the impulse to just vomit your business all over somebody
right.
or go mute, you mm-hmm. do neither and you just simply share a little bit about, hey, this is what I'm up to. And, you know, if you're interested, give us a shout.
Huh. It sounds so simple.
Well, again, Jonathan, we can add in the 4 hours of affirmation, the three spins, and the spinning, if you'd like.
Right. Okay. No, it makes sense. I guess I just don't know. I didn't know. I don't know why with my own business, I just don't know how to have that. I don't know, make the feeling go away.
Right. See, and that's what we call a rabbit hole. That's what I call a rabbit hole in coaching. It's like, I don't either, but I know that I don't need to know that.
Okay.
In order to move forward.
Okay.
You know, that's where psychology gets in the way.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That was really simple, but that makes sense.
All okay. right. Well, go for it. Simple works.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael.
You're welcome. I always love that. People go, well, but that's really simple. That's the point. Life, you know, we can navigate our way through life with two tools, common sense and wisdom. And fortunately, both of them are innate. They're not things we really need to practice. Common sense is just seeing what's there without the noise. And wisdom is this deeper intelligence that we're all a part of. Like, nobody questions that there's an intelligence behind the body. Right? Nobody thinks they've got to go in and heal a cut on their finger. They know that the intelligence behind the body will do that. Nobody sits there and thinks, oh, I better remember to beat my heart. I better practice heart beating class later. Because we know that the intelligence behind the body will just take care of that. Nobody sits and does classes for acorns on becoming oak trees or pine cones on becoming pine trees. Because we get there's an intelligence behind life that will take care of that. Well, there's an intelligence, that same intelligence, behind the mind, behind our thinking. And if we let it, it will steer us, it will guide us. And along with the common sense that just comes with clear seeing, those two things, they'll take us all the way. I had a friend who called me a little while back. I don't remember if I told this story on the radio at the time. But she called me a little while back for some informal coaching because her husband had a heart attack over the Thanksgiving holiday, and her daughter was sick and they were having financial issues and their health insurance was on the line. And unfortunately, I was caught up in my own dramas that week, and I actually remembered thinking I should postpone the chat till I was in a better frame of mind. But I also knew that the way I was feeling in the moment, my judgment was impaired, so that I didn't necessarily trust the thought, oh, I shouldn't talk to her. And that deeper intelligence that I'm talking about kind of prompted me to go meet with her anyways. And so after she unfolded her story to me, which was a difficult story, you know, it's really difficult when somebody that you care about has a heart attack, and when your children are sick, and when you have financial issues. I think we all know situations like that. I then shared mine about the uncertainty and insecurity that I was feeling when I looked at what was going on in my life, and she was sharing hers, and it was a miserable conversation. But there was one fundamental difference between us throughout the whole conversation, which was she thought that all the crap that she was seeing was actually in her life. And I knew that all the crap I was seeing was on my own glasses. And so we had a nice lunch. She got really clear about what actually needed to be dealt with in the moment, which was considerably less than she'd been concerned with. And later that evening, she sent me a quick email. Thanks for today. I shall get me back. I just have to be patient. And that, for me, that's really the key to a deeper understanding of stress and thought and well-being and life. Is if you go outside and it's snowing, you don't have to fix the weather. You just put on some more appropriate clothes, or you go back inside and wait until the storm has passed. Because you know that no matter how bad the weather seems, the sun's always shining in the background. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see anything. And it's true in our lives, even when our heads are filled with all sorts of horrible thoughts about life and we're feeling really stressed, we don't need to fix that, because we know that that will pass. It's just a thought storm. And once it's passed, the sun of our own well-being is still going to be shining there in the background. I did an interview recently, and in fact, I was on the web just in the break. And if you type, if you're on Facebook, if you type stress virus into Facebook, it will take you to a site called Stress Virus Eradication with Vivian Barclay. And on it, there's an interview that I did on what she called man stress, which is about how men deal with stress as contrasted to how women deal with stress. And it's a really interesting interview. I very much recommend reading it. And one of the metaphors in there is this. Imagine driving along in a car and the check engine light comes on. And so what often happens is that we get really annoyed with the light instead of checking the engine, because we'd rather think that the warning light's faulty than take the time to check out what's really going on under the hood. So we reset the check engine light again and again and again without ever dealing with the engine. And things get worse and worse until eventually the engine completely seizes up and the car needs to be towed to the car hospital for a complete overhaul. And it unfolds that way just because in society, and maybe this is more men than women, we're taught that stress is something to be overcome and pushed through, instead of just seeing it for what it is and adapting as needed. And as we begin to understand more about the nature of thought, how we experience and respond to our thinking, not the world around us, two things in my experience happen. Our stress tolerance actually drops because we're getting more sane. We recognize, hang on, this is no way to live. But also our ability to just let go of the stress increases. So I highly recommend you check out that interview. You can find it on Facebook by typing Stress Virus into your search engine and looking for that. You can find out more about me and what I do at supercoach.com. You can maybe join me in Ojai in July for a small group retreat by going to supercoach.com/thrive. My thanks, as always, to today it was Mitch and Joe in the studio for keeping us on air. And until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.